I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Fuel your team with Total Coffee from Staples Business Advantage. Our comprehensive program offers no upfront cost brewers, installation, maintenance, and supplies. Plus, our incredible selection of coffee and beverages, including our new Pick Me Up Provisions brand. We handle everything from finding the best brewer to providing ongoing service, all at no cost with your minimum monthly spend on breakroom products. Visit staplesadvantage.com/totalcoffee to get started.
Hello and welcome to the 323rd edition of the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. In Nashville, Tennessee, I'm Matt Perkins. And a fly route across the Harpeth River from me here in the Music City, it's our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton.
Hey, Matt, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Dude, I'm hanging in there, man. I'm hanging in there. No Josh tonight. He's busy being a good teacher at parent teacher conferences or something like that tonight, open house. I don't know, trying to make those kids smarter. So good for him. He can't be here with us. So you're just stuck with the two Music City dwellers here on the Illegal Motion podcast, part of Mike Farrell Sports and presented by betonline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for all of your online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at BetOnline. Head it on over to the website. Use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first wager with your promo code BLEAV. That's BLEAV. BetOnline, where the game starts. Let's get started, Coach. We're going to have probably a little bit of an abbreviated episode here tonight with just the two of us and a whole lot going on in the college football world that we want to get to, but we will start like we do every week. One big takeaway from the previous weekend, and sometimes at the end of the segment, when we do one for the road, you guys will do two or three for the road. I'm doing two big takeaways from this weekend, or three big takeaways, I should say, from this weekend. I'm going to start. I have egg on my face. I got up here in this exact space last week and extolled the virtues of Louisville, how well they played under first-year head coach Jeff Brohm, how great everything was going there. And they got the Perkins stink on them last week. They played their sloppiest game of the year against Pitt at Pitt. You know Pitt's always good for a couple upsets every year. And Louisville couldn't get out of their own way. They only had 3 turnovers. And the reason I say only is because they actually had 5 fumbles, but only one of them was recovered by Pitt. Otherwise, that number could have been much, much higher. They had bad special teams play, missed field goals. And the wheels just completely came off in the second half. You know, they were up 21-14 at halftime, and then Pitt turned, flipped the switch and scored the last 24 points of the game all in the second half. Defense really bowed up. So good for Pitt, bad for me and our friends up there in the Bluegrass State. They turn out to be very not for real. But speaking of show curses,
Matt, I don't know that I'd read too much into that because anytime you get a team like what Louisville has done, and the reason why they're ready to move on from Scott Satterfield is because of these inconsistent swings, these wild swings. And they were probably more valleys than peaks under Satterfield. But like anytime you get a new situation, you get some of the funk from last year, you're going to see some of that stuff. Pitt does bring that out in a lot of teams mm-hmm. as well. That's one of Pat Narduzzi's specialties. But unless they do it 2-3 weeks in a row and that becomes their identity, I wouldn't read too much into it. Every team in their first year is they're due for a stinker, and this was Louisville's stinker. I mean, you look at every great team, even Nick Saban had some stinkers in his first year at Alabama.
Kirby Smart had
some, yeah, Kirby Smart barely beating the worst team in FCS by 2 points his first year and getting boat raced by Ole Miss, by a mediocre Ole Miss team that year. You have
this year's Wisconsin team who looked mm-hmm. absolutely pathetic against Iowa this past week in Luke Fickell's first year. And they're hoping mm-hmm. that is just a bump in the road and not a trend. So which is one of the games I want to talk about here.
Just eyes peeled. Anyway. Yeah. And I still have a lot of faith in Louisville. I still think Jeff Brom's doing a great job. I wouldn't let this game I wouldn't read too much into it. Now, if they don't, like I said, if this becomes a trend, then maybe we'll talk, but we'll see in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, I talked about the Perkins stink a second ago. Mm-hmm. The entire show was on Notre Dame last week, which was a really bad sign for the Irish, but they came through. They came through big time. And honestly, like they beat down, like completely beat down USC. Their defense just played an elite game. USC only scoring 20 points is an elite game. Caleb Williams, 3 picks, only 1 touchdown. Elite play by the defense all they around.
Harassed him all freaking night long.
Yeah, we will talk about USC a little bit more later when we preview another one of this weekend's games. But the one other thing that quickly was a takeaway for me is that process, that transition into a new coach, sometimes is going to take a little bit longer than you want. If you want Wisconsin, just absolutely crap the bed against Iowa. Iowa managed to win despite having 37 yards passing against Wisconsin.
That's bad.
Yeah. I think it was 6 for 17 was the final. 6 for 17 for 37 yards, I think, was the final stat line. Don't quote me exactly. If you want to hear my full reaction about that, head over to Believe in Badgers. 2 shows this week talking about it, one with Bernie and one with former Badger All-American Brian Calhoun. But what's going to happen is that Iowa's going to go 11-1 on the regular season, and they're going to make the Big Ten championship game. And Brian Ferentz is still going to have a job because of it. They won't hit that 325 points number, and it still won't matter because they'll be 11-1.
Yeah, it's crazy. Defense and special teams, and them scoring just barely enough points to eke out wins is going to give you kind of a very false sense of hope about the Iowa Hawkeyes. I did notice that because it ain't like they lit the world on fire either. I mean, it was just a very sloppy game. The weather conditions didn't do you any favors either, but, you know, albeit the rain held off, it was still very, very windy. And so it's going to take one or two recruiting classes and maybe a couple of trips into the portal to kind of build your team the way that this coaching staff needs it to be built.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Again, want my full thoughts over on Believe in Badgers. We have plus Brian Calhoun and Bernie talking about the entire first half of the season with Fick that just dropped earlier today as we record this on a Thursday night. Corey, what was your takeaway from last weekend? What's the thing that's still sticking with you?
Well, I learned what tightrope surgery kind of is. I don't know the full extent of what it is, but it is a surgery to help you recover faster from a high ankle sprain, and Brock Bowers is going to have tightrope surgery. So he'll be out 3 to 6 weeks. That was a huge blow. I took away that Georgia's just going to ebb and flow based on the quality of their opponent. They got up on level 12 for Kentucky, and they've got down to Vandy's level, and they're just going to kind of, go through the season that way. So I got to take that for what it's worth and just hope they keep collecting wins and make it to the SEC championship and don't get shut out. So I took that away. I'm impressed by how Arkansas is playing versus what their record is, because they play so hard. KJ Jefferson's a special, special dude. I just feel like he's being wasted away by Dan Enos. I really, really, really like the Washington Huskies. Kalen DeBoer is doing a phenomenal job there with that team.
You think that Washington won that game, or that Oregon lost that game on bad coaching? Because Lanning in his press conference afterwards said loss is 100% on him. He made a lot of questionable fourth down decisions that led to the Ducks not getting as many, you know, points opportunities as they probably should have.
Yeah, but they were, I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah, well, he's going to say that, but, you know, what else is he going to say? But I don't know. I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, those fourth down, a lot, you know, going forward on fourth down and some of those questionable decisions didn't help. But then again, they led most of the game. So, like, they did a lot of things right. And then Washington had to capitalize at some point, and they did. And you knew they were going to capitalize on one of those at home. Just because of the environment they were in. But I don't think it takes anything away from what Washington did. I don't think it, you know, I think it was a really good game between two really good teams, and minute details like that are factors.
Yeah, when they absolutely have two, are.
When you have two equally matched teams, whether they're two really bad teams or two really good teams, if they're equally matched, it's the small things that kind of drive the game. And for that particular game, it was the fourth down opportunities and Oregon not being as successful as they wanted to be. So, but Penix, man, he came through. Bo Nix had a great game. Both defenses played well when they had to. And man, it was just a very, very entertaining game.
It was a lot of fun to watch that game. And I know a lot of times I feel like in like these big, like marquee games, we get a little bit of a letdown, especially if it's a team, you know, some teams that haven't been there a ton for a while. Washington really hasn't been there like this for a while. And it was not a letdown at all. In fact, it was the exact opposite. It was the biggest game of the weekend that ended up coming through in the biggest way on the weekend. And so we can only hope that this coming weekend, we see more of the same. There are four just truly outstanding matchups, I think. Two that are off the charts that we're going to get to here right now.
Are you talking about LSU Army?
I'm not talking about LSU Army, although I think, you know, our boys in the service may give the Tigers a little bit more than they bargained for, even though it's not exactly a banner year for the men.
I think they cover. On SEC After Dark, I picked them to cover.
Really?
It's a 30-point spread. I don't think with the new clock rules and the way they hold on to the ball, I don't know. I don't know, I don't know that unless LSU just scores really quickly.
Yeah, unless LSU gets up early and Army's trying to play from behind. Like if LSU gets up big early, Army trying to play from behind. But even then, it's not like they're going to completely quit their offensive scheme.
Yeah, I think, you know, a team like Army, I think if you get – I think if it's a tight game, maybe, but like if you get down big, you're just going to do what you do at that point. It's going to be like, okay, well, we're getting the hell beat out of us, so let's just do what we do, you know? And, you know, to a certain point.
All right. I think that's enough on LSU Army for us here today. Let's get into the actual good stuff this weekend.
Believe in Army.
I think that's a different show. I don't know if we have that here on the network, but it might be. It's if there is an Army football show, I believe it would be here on the Believe Network. The game, though, I'm a little bit more interested in is Penn State at Ohio State. Finally feels like October, Coach. Big Ten matchup that is, in effect, a playoff elimination game between these two Big Ten East games. Got two first-year starters at quarterback, two elite edge rushers, and I think most importantly, two coaches who are under extreme, some would say inappropriately high pressure in terms of Ryan Day. And if you look at his record and people talk about him being on the hot seat if they lose to Michigan this year, James Franklin's done an outstanding job at Penn State. They are definitely trending in the right direction, but he still seems to feel a lot of heat every year. And that's just kind of probably just comes with the expectations of those two programs. Mm-hmm. So, Corey, the way I want to frame this one is, who do you think is under more pressure to win this game, Ryan Day or James Franklin, and why?
Definitely Ryan Day, because of what happened last year in the Peach Bowl, how he got so close, how he gets so close every year and just gets beat in these huge games. I mean, you can see that he's feeling the pressure because he tried to call out and fight Lou Holtz, you know, and things like that. Like, I just think the Ohio State fans are already kind of fed up with him. And I think losing to Penn State or getting even boat raced by Penn State, which is also possible, would be almost a straw that broke the camel's back. I think both guys are under immense pressure all the time just because of where they're at. James Franklin also puts a lot of pressure on himself and he creates some of that. But I think Penn State fans, I think they would be lying to you if any of them told you that James Franklin was a bad coach, because he's doing a tremendous job there. With where he started and the program that he's built and the fact that they have these expectations speak volumes.
I don't think that any of them would say he's a bad coach, but I think they would say he has underachieved. And I actually think that this game is more important for James Franklin, because Ryan Day at the end of the year, at the end of the season, all that really matters is if they beat Michigan. If they lose to Penn State and they beat Michigan, things will be okay for Ryan Day. But this, in a lot of Penn State circles and Penn State people I've talked to, say that, you know, this season in a lot of ways is make or break for James Franklin. It's, you know, the best talent he's probably amassed. They have their most complete team they've ever had under his tenure. The quarterback is the highest
better upside. Better than the Trace McSorley, Saquon Barkley, Rose Bowl team?
The defense is better. The defense is much better. You look at the with Chop Robinson and all of those.
And they have Michael Rutgers. Parsons on that team too?
I don't think so. I would have to go back and check. They might have, but I don't believe that they did off the top of my head. I bet our friend Kyle Golick would know. Shout out to you, Kyle. I know that you would know that one. But I think that this game really actually matters more for James Franklin, because of just all of, you know, he hasn't gotten over the hump at all in terms of his record against Ohio State and Michigan. And that's who he has to beat. And that's what this job really is. And if not now, when, I guess, for Penn State, because it's not getting any easier. They're getting the conference just becomes tougher next year with no divisions and four ranked teams joining the conference.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
So like I said, I picked Penn State at the beginning of the year to win the East, and so I'm picking them to win this game as well. Mm-hmm. I think Saturday is the signature moment for this program in the post Paterno era. Sorry to bore you with that take there, Coach. But
I'm just always tired. I always yawn at this time of night. Man, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's no wrong answer here when you ask who's got more pressure.
Well, who do you think is going to win?
I think Penn State's going to win.
Okay, so you're with me then on Penn State pulling it out this weekend. Okay,
I think they win. I think they hold up. I think their defense is ridiculous, and I don't know that Ryan Day and that offense is going to have any answers. And the reason I say he's under the last reason I say he's under more pressure is because it's at home. You get boat raced by Penn State at home. You think it's going to get really loud there?
Or really quiet, which is more dangerous.
Well, it's going to get really loud on Monday. That's what
I was saying quiet in the horseshoe, except for the Penn State fans who have
quiet. It's going to get quiet on Saturday and loud on Monday.
Well, a place that it is pretty much always loud, especially come the third Saturday in October. You know where that is?
Is Nick Saban on the hot seat? No.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Nick Saban still not on the hot seat. I don't care what what any caller on the Feinbaum show says.
Yeah. Jeez. But, that's so ridiculous.
This game, this rivalry that was, you know, that has been on and off an excellent rivalry and one that has had some serious duds in it and some serious stretches of some real domination. It was renewed, rekindled, whatever word you want to use, last year. Vols pulled off the big upset over Bryce Young and company in Knoxville last year. Back in Tuscaloosa this year, Tennessee's offense not quite as potent. Alabama still trying to figure out who they are on offense, even though Milroe, mm-hmm. the quarterback, has really taken a hold as the guy.
Mm-hmm. It's a step in the right direction,
but I still think both these teams are trying to figure out who they are on offense. Coach, what do you see in this one, and what do you think Tennessee can do to go back to back against Saban and the Tide?
Okay, so before I answer that, I'm gonna address this. Truly, the rivalry is renewed, regardless of what happened on the field. Maybe the on the field portion of it, but don't get it twisted. This rivalry has been alive and well since the beginning, since the origins of it. When they first started playing this game, third Saturday in October. So that rivalry never died. The performance was lackluster on the field. But, yeah, there's some true hatred between Alabama and Tennessee fans. Now, as far as this year's game, what can Tennessee do? Defensively, I think they need to disrupt what Jalen Milroe does well, which is move around and buy time and scramble and move the pocket. I think they need to take advantage of the fact that Tommy Rees is still reading the instruction manual on his quarterback and trying to figure out what the features are on his new weapon there. But, you know, secondary wise, I think, you know, you limit Jermaine Burton, who's actually quietly had a really nice season. You make things difficult for Alabama. Do not give up big plays. If they're going to score, make them drive, right? I think Vandy gave themselves a chance. I know Vandy and, you know, Tennessee are vastly different programs at vastly different places, but the plan is still the same. They made Georgia earn every single first down they got, and they gave themselves – they were within one score at the end of the game. They weren't good enough to pull it off, but they were within one score in the fourth quarter of the number one team in the country by making them earn their points. And by doing that, Georgia threw almost a pick six, which they tackled at the one and they scored the next play. So pick sort of six. They made mistakes. They kicked more field goals than having touchdowns down in the red area. The more plays you stack up in an offense that doesn't really know what they're doing, I think is trouble and will give Tennessee a chance. And offensively,
Joe Milton is exactly who we thought he was going to be.
Wildly inconsistent. Erratic.
Wildly inconsistent and not nearly as accurate as they want or they need someone to be, frankly, to maximize what Heupel really wants to do. And that's what one of Hendon Hooker
can't throw short passes.
Yeah, and Hendon Hooker could throw those like the one step quick screen outside the numbers where like you have the two receiver stack and it's just like a one-on-one block and the other one's gonna run. He would throw those perfectly every time. Milton's throwing them over dudes' heads, behind guys. Like, you know, and those are, they use that in a lot of ways instead of like a proper run game, and it's ineffective. Mm-hmm.
It disrupts the tempo and the timing of everything when he does that. So they've got some answers too. I don't think either team has a great quarterback situation, honestly. And I think Alabama actually has, I never thought I'd say this in this matchup this particular year, but Alabama now has the advantage at the quarterback position because Milroe, I think, is a little more consistent than Joe Milton is. And they got the home field advantage, too.
Yeah, and they've got the home field advantage. So I like Alabama here, even though it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's not outside the realm of possibility, I don't think.
No, it's not. I mean, I think the spread is 9.5, which I think is way too much.
Yeah, it feels like it should be seven and a half. But
I'm thinking six tops.
Okay.
Five and a half, six tops. I think this is going to be a field goal game again. Tennessee's going to have every chance in the world to win it. Can they pull it off? Who knows?
Well, we will find out. Another game, though, that I'm interested in, mostly if everything in this matchup really rides on whether Duke quarterback Riley Leonard will play in their game down at the Doak in Tallahassee against Florida State. It looks like he's going to be back. Looks like he might be back. The Elko still hasn't confirmed or denied. He said he was on the right track as of yesterday. So I think if Riley Leonard plays, this could be an interesting game just because Duke is so disciplined. And Florida State, you know, while they're still undefeated, they still look very, very good. We've seen a couple chinks in the armor recently as they haven't been winning, you know, maybe as soundly as some people would like. I guess is probably the best way to say it. I mean, you know, last week against Syracuse, that was fine, but they struggled a little bit with Virginia Tech. They let Virginia Tech hang around 2 weeks ago, and Duke is a team that if you let them hang around, they can, you know, make you really pay for it. So I'm curious here, though, Coach, if we get a playing Riley Leonard, a Riley Leonard that is good enough to, you know, be at least close to what he was pre-injury, do you think that the Blue Devils have a chance to pull off the upset?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It'll play out a lot like the Notre Dame game where they have a chance at the end, and it's going to be on them to whether or not they capitalize. Riley Leonard is that dude.
He is.
I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with Duke football, but like you watch him play and you watch him elevate the guys around him, they're a completely different team when he plays. And they're a gritty team regardless of whether he plays. So, like, they're going to be physical. They're going to hit Florida State in the mouth. Now, with Florida State, I think they're still relatively immature when it comes to how they're, you know, how they ebb and flow with different teams. Like the Virginia Tech game, I think that's just a little bit of immaturity, a little bit of that, you know, relaxed mentality of, okay, this is not quite – as tough of a matchup, so we probably don't have to get up to level 12 to win this one. And sometimes that doesn't matter. With a veteran team, sometimes it doesn't matter. They just go out, do their thing, and go home. And sometimes you get an immature bunch, and they make those games a little bit more interesting than they should be. And I think that's kind of where Florida State is right now because they're not used to being in this position. But I think if they can get past Duke, I don't see a game that they can lose again this year.
Interesting.
I just don't think if they beat Duke with a healthy Riley Leonard, I just don't see them losing.
So, I mean, their biggest stumbling blocks would be at Pitt, you know, who we just saw beat Louisville.
Maybe.
I mean,
yeah,
Pitt is the ACC's Purdue. They will knock off that high ranked team when you are least expecting. Miami.
Maybe we get that. No, not Miami. They get it. Like, that game is a Super Bowl for Florida State every year. I don't think Miami's going to sneak up on them at all.
And then I don't know what Florida is going to be looking like.
There's a heated rivalry. They'll beat the hell out of Florida.
I don't know what Florida's going to look like by the end of the year because I feel like they're starting to turn into a MASH unit a little bit.
Yeah, they are. But so, those are two games at Florida State. No matter how bad they are, those games will always be games.
That's true. All right, let's head out west for Utah versus USC. USC last week, like we mentioned, they got their butts whooped up on by Notre Dame and Notre Dame's excellent defense. Trojans have another tough defense to go against this weekend after they were taken to the woodshed by Notre Dame. Coach, what odds would you give USC to get up off the mat, take down a Utah team that has been a thorn in their side for a couple seasons now?
Yeah. They're going to have to find a way to find some physicality. First of all,
they have not shown that they have any of that.
They don't. They're Charmin soft. Alex Greenwich, I don't know what more you need. It's just not working. Maybe he's a great position coach. He got to that point for a reason, whatever reason that is. He needs to go backwards to that step again, because it ain't working out for him at USC. They're just not physical. They're not good on defense. And for them to be able to win this game, Caleb Williams, or for them to be able to win at all, Caleb Williams is going to have to give a Heisman performance every week, because that's what it's going to take, because defense ain't stopping anybody. So for Utah, I mean, they're just going to keep, I mean, it's going to be this all night long, right? And I don't know. Like, this game is interesting. If USC plays offensively like they're capable of playing, they can avalanche you a little bit and overwhelm you. And maybe that'll give Utah some problems. And maybe Utah, you know, that's how USC beats you. They just avalanche you and you can't really recover by the time it's over. But when you can get USC, it's when you jump on them early. You get them mm-hmm. making mistakes. You get them back on their heels a little bit, and you get that defense. You get that defense going. And when I say going, like going backwards. So for Utah, I think whatever game plan they had in the Pac-12 championship last year, dust that bad boy off and go right back at them, because they're the same Charmin soft defense that they always been.
Yeah. And they got beat up on the offensive line as well last week. Mm-hmm. And Utah has some dudes in their front seven. Mm-hmm. So I suggest that they lean on said dudes and bully ball them, because they haven't shown that they can bully really anyone of late. So, all right, well, let's finish it off. Taiwan on for the road here, Coach, where we talk about one other game or thing you're going to be watching for this weekend. I am out in the Mountain West. I don't know if y'all saw Colorado State's incredible comeback against Boise State last week. That was absolutely bonkers mm-hmm. stuff out of Colorado State, coming back to win 31-30 over the Bronx at home. They were down by 30-10 with 6 minutes left, or five minutes left, and scored 21 straight points quickly, and ended up pulling out the win. Highlight Torrey Horton, who is wide receiver for the Rams. He is one of the leading receivers in the country, 690 yards and six touchdowns already this season through six games. And he has just been, one of the most underappreciated, I think, superstars that we have at, especially at the wide receiver position. He can, you know, make a pretty good claim that he is the top group of five receiver in the country. And, you know, he had the chance last year to hit the portal after an all-conference season and head on out to pretty much wherever he wanted to go. But he stuck it out at Colorado State, and good for him, because he is really just lighting things up in general for the Rams. But they're playing one of the most surprising teams in the country this weekend, and that is the UNLV Runnin' Rebs. The Rebels are 5-1 now after another
Who's coaching the Rebs?
Barry Odom.
Oh, it's a good coach. Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Everything they've done makes mm-hmm. sense. I did not realize he was their coach.
Yeah. And so, Barry Odom and them boys have won since losing to Michigan 35-7. They've put up more than 40 points in four straight weeks. They beat Vanderbilt, have beat UTEP, Hawaii, and Nevada as well, scoring more than 40 points in every game along the way. And their defense, while no great shakes, is a huge improvement year over year, which is zero surprise when you add Barry Odom, who is still an excellent defensive mind, to that team. Super well-balanced team. So it's, you know, one of the most exciting teams in Colorado State heading out to one of the most surprising teams, UNLV. And that's going to be a really fun one on Saturday night out in the desert. So I'm looking forward to that this weekend. What about you, Corey?
All right, you know how Publix has the buy two get one free mm-hmm. on the Cokes, on
it's
the Coke
Zeros? Yeah, so like it's like every like 6 or 8 weeks they do that.
Yeah, well, they got it going on right now because I just bought some like a couple nights ago. Oh, by the way, I won the Burton Bowl.
Congratulations.
It was a JV game where James Lawson came over to Innsworth.
Oh, if good. Well, I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah, it was 28-13 was okay. Well, all had time to run up. But we got a quick 28, and then we put our freshman others in, our payers, like our like guys that probably aren't going to play past Mondays ever. And they scored twice, but.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah. So, so I say that because I got a 3-pack.
Okay.
Right. But we're going to buy two. We're going to get one free. Okay. Free.
I love it.
So the one that I'm really excited about is the Hugh Freeze Bowl, the Ole Miss versus Auburn, on the Plains. I think that's going to be a very interesting contest. It's a 6.5-point game in favor of Ole Miss, but we all know that it's going to be a little tighter than we think because of this is Hugh Freeze's Super Bowl. So I'm very excited about that. Clemson versus Miami, just an interesting matchup. Two coaches that are considered doofuses right now are playing against each other. See if Clemson can kind of reclaim a little bit of their season because they're having a rough go at it in a very weak conference. And then my get one free is on the West Coast. Oregon, they're not going to have much time to mope because they welcome Wazoo to Autzen Stadium, and they have to kind of, you know, they can't sit back and mope because Wazoo will punch them in the mouth if they do. So that's going to be an interesting game. See if Bo Nix and Oregon can bounce back in the way that we all know that they can and should be able to. But this game should be very, very interesting because I think Wazoo will give them a very, very, very good contest.
Yeah, and speaking of West Coast football, one thing to note, I'm interested just to see if UCLA's offense continues to struggle, if Dante Moore continues to struggle against Stanford on Saturday. I won't be surprised if he's pulled for either Ethan Garbers or Colin Schley, because while we know he's the future there, he has been atrocious against Pac-12 opponents this year, like genuinely atrocious. So he is, he's definitely got a lot of promise. He's only completing 45.5% of his passes in conference games this year. And that's not going to cut it for the 5-star freshman. He has looked really rough, especially against Utah and Oregon State in their two losses there. So I'm just something I'm keeping an eye on. I still think that, you know, the coaching staff still clearly has, you know, faith in him to be the guy moving forward. But, you know, if they're trying to salvage something out of this year with the finishing schedule that they have, which is, you know, which is tough, it's definitely not, you know, easy sledding on the schedule for the Bruins for the rest of the year. Colorado, we know they're good. Arizona has been a revelation second half of the year. Still got USC. I mean, it's definitely, you know, if they want, you know, they have a chance to win out, I think, just because USC is so Charmany soft. But they're going to need better quarterback play. And, you know, they have a chance to make a run, albeit probably not one for the conference title game because of previous losses to Utah and Oregon State. But, you know, they could still finish 10-2, maybe make a New Year's Six game if everything breaks right for them. And so it's just sort of an interesting dilemma that Chip Kelly has on his hands.
Yeah. And I'm getting a note from Josh about his one for the road. He's actually listening in live somehow.
Oh, wonderful.
His one for the road is Northwestern versus Nebraska. He's really excited about that game. He's got his Northwestern Cubs hat, and he's ready to roll. So just wanted to pass that note on there. He's just super jazzed. Like he's wondering why that's not the big noon kickoff game.
That's true. I mean, that is I think it would be an appropriate place for Urban Meyer to end up in the middle of nowhere covering two nowhere teams that both begin with N. So I think that is where we are going to finish it off here tonight on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. So thanks for tuning in on the Believe Network, MikeFerrellSports.com, or wherever you are consuming this. Thank you again to betonline.ag. And on behalf of the man who is not here today, our intrepid blogger from Big Ten Accounting, Josh Cook, up there in Chicago, Illinois, and our own offensive coordinator, Coach Corey Burton, here in Nashville, Tennessee, I'm Matt Perkins saying so long, and see you next time on the Legal Motion College Football Podcast.
Go Dawgs.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.